now.
You want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 496, recorded live on May 10th, 2017. I'm your host, Ed Hard Hat with
Taz427 and
Info Farrier.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by the good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on our Patreon or PayPal logos on our webpage to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. Yeah, so we got all sorts of little surprises here, which I was very happy to see. The bottom thirds are for the people watching the videos is back. So we've got the overlays and we've got the videos. So thank you to Google and the Google people out there for finally getting that back after about, what, 6 months to 8 months?
Yeah,
it's been a while. It's been a while. And for shows like this, it drives us crazy when we can't, you know, do stuff like that. So thank you for turning that back on. It's wonderful. Let's see. Other fun stuff. I've had my iPad 2 since, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, give or take. It's been a while. When it first came out, that was my big investment. I never needed one since then. And if you've been up with the shows that we do, I use my iPad 2 for the sound cart. So for when we've got, you know, like when Scott says something and I do that, we've got different types of sounds and the songs and the transitions and such. It finally went out on me. It went up and filled up on memory. I haven't added anything to it for a couple of years now. And I guess the latest update was just too much for it. So I literally reset it from scratch. And I was hoping I could get, remember the same applications that I use on a normal basis and put that on. And two, that it would work tonight. Because I literally was up last night getting stuff put back onto it. So that'll keep you going. But other than that, you know, that's the worst thing that will drive an IT person, especially if you're into computers, an IT person absolutely nuts is if something is not right. If something is wrong with the computer, tablet, phone, you're up till 4 a.m. working on stuff. That's just how it is.
And then after you reinstall everything, you're wondering, what did I forget to install?
Right. Because what it's am I missing?
Bite me.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. And I literally. Yeah. Go ahead.
There's a great UK comedian a few years ago did a brilliant takeoff of George Formby's ukulele classic, When I'm Cleaning Windows, and it was called Reinstalling Windows.
Yeah.
I'll have to find it and send it to you.
Sounds good. I'll
been
be
there,
interested.
Done that.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So needless to say, I got things going, but you never know for sure until you start doing the show. When you start doing the show, that's when it's like, oh, it's not working right again. So yeah, you hope for the best and go from there. As far as geocaching goes, wife Amy, being at home all the time, let's just say honeydew lists were in session all week. And anything that I wasn't doing with honeydew list, I was trying to protect my own possessions, because when she goes and gets stir crazy, because if you don't know, she had appendicitis a week ago and has been home bed resting ever since. And when she's like finally to the point of, well, now I'm going to organize your side of the closet. That's where lines are drawn, even though I can't draw a line technically when it comes to things like that. She went back to work.
Did she get to the thwackers?
Almost. Almost. Those are actually safely in a storage area. The Thwackers.
The Thwackers.
Yes. You see this orange thing off to my left here? That's a Thwacker. I'll show you about it. It's back from my Head Hard Hat Brotherhood days, and it is a foam 2x4. And there's a whole story behind those. That's one of, next to Chris Moose, that is Amy's bane of existence, are Thwackers and Chris Moose. That's how that goes. So anyways, luckily the doctor said that she could go to work, and she did today. And so AKA my side of the closet / the cash stash coin or the prize area in the vault are safe at the moment because she's back at work. So I digress. Taz, how about yourself?
I didn't get out and do any caching. I would have liked to done some caching in this ghost town that I went through. And actually, the ghost town is only a couple miles from where I live. It was an old gold miner town called Clarksville. The Mormons moved in. They brought in medicine for the gold miners when they were having malaria and other issues. And there's a old Pony Express station there that was built in the 1860s, and you know, it's got a lot of history, but the area is not allowed to be accessed except for when they do Clarksville days. So no geocaches there, but you know, had a good time on Saturday with the family walking through there, but I do need to get 13 caches before I fly to Atlanta, either that or 13 caches on the morning the day after, because I'm going for Lake Lanier and I'm going to make that my 2500 cache.
Very nice. Yeah. Speaking when you were talking about ghost towns in Upper Michigan in the Upper Peninsula, there's a lot of them from the iron ore mine days, and you can do the same thing. You just walk in, and it's like they just kind of left. The stuff's still in fairly decent. The buildings are still in decent shape. But they're fun to go through. Those are just fun to go through and explore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Sarah, how about yourself?
I had the worst caching week in a long time. My other half was overseas doing necessary things, basically visiting elderly parents that aren't in a state to travel anymore. So he's just come back from a fortnight of that. So I've been solo mom for a while.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Fortunately, they're old enough to largely manage themselves, but my sum total is one cache and one event.
All right.
And that's all.
That's not bad.
The event was quite good. Again, hearing a bit about some plans for 2018, which if they come off will be really, really cool. And when there's anything concrete, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
But what I've been doing a little bit of planning for the City Safari on Sunday with seeing what Team Croak and Stagger can get up to.
That's awesome. Why don't you go over real quick what that is?
Well, City Safari is a race. You've got a map with loads and loads of places to get to on it. And you've got 6 hours to get to as many of them as you can. But you're allowed to use public transport, buses, trains, ferry. You're not allowed to jump in a car and go, because that would be somewhat frowned upon and disqualify you. And you get to a location and you text in, say, what's the third word on this door? So it's the maps are to Rogaine, which is long distance orienteering standard rather than geocaching maps.
Mm-hmm.
So it uses all that. It uses a sort of navigation geocaching skills plus orienteering. And we've got to get back there by 4. If we're there after 4, you lose points for every minute that you're late back. It's all about route choice. You can either go, one just round the corner may only be worth 5 points. One halfway up or at the top of a mountain with no decent public transport access may be worth 80 or 90 points. Mm. And you decide what's your best route and how many points can you get in the time. And we don't, of course, we won't know where the points actually are until we turn up and get the maps on the day.
Right.
So we'll see how it goes. Could be. And I finally managed to set up an event for about an hour after it finishes, just to give the caches that are competing a chance for a smiley that day.
Right.
And had a mad panic because I thought I'd set it up. Then discovered that the place we normally use wasn't open on a Sunday evening at the time I needed it.
Oh no!
Because it's Sunday, that side of Wellington is dead. And there's nothing. It's a government area, so it's buzzing during the week and in the evenings, but not on a Sunday late afternoon, early evening.
Yeah.
But another place that's closer was open. So the event will be at the Backbencher rather than at the Thistle. Note, Backbencher, which is A, actually closer to the finish, and B, within the limit, so I didn't have to get the reviewer involved and the case reapproved.
Oh, awesome.
So it's, yeah, so hopefully it'll go well.
Yeah, now it sounds, actually a lot of the stuff that you were describing there kind of reminds me of MOGA. The MOGA event is a lot like that with the challenges for points and what have you. Yeah, it sounds very similar to that.
You'll have to tell me about that sometime. Yeah, I keep hearing MOGA and thinking, what on earth is it? Everybody must know, and I don't.
They just
quite
did
similar to the Yolo County Challenge as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, MOGA 2017, they just had 2 weekends ago, I think it was. And I went to last year's, and it's a lot of fun, and you can do a lot of things. And if you are gangbusters for your team winning points, this is the thing that you want to go to. And it's quite the mega event as well. So it's neat stuff. I mean, people love going for points when it comes to geocaching or what have you.
Well, we haven't got a cat in hell's chance of winning.
It doesn't matter. Just getting out and having fun and doing
it. Well, my other half's running with another orienteering friend in the same age class as we are. So
you're going to beat him, right?
No, there's a word I use there, running. That is something I don't do.
Right. All right. Well, fair enough.
So we can have that one. The two boys are running as a separate team, and they're running in they have a pretty good chance of it. But hey, I'm not. I walk. I don't run.
There you go.
Are you allowed to use a bicycle?
Only if you can get it on the bus.
We would find a way.
There's some buses that have the bike racks on the front now here in California. Where
there you go.
A lot of them do.
You could get them on the trains, I think, but you can't get them on the buses yet. It's in the local council's annual plan at some point, but ain't happened yet.
Next year.
That would be nice. All right, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community and what's coming up this week on Geo Gearheads. This episode 280, Gear Your Bike 3, Dano of Team Pugach returns for more tips and tricks for bicycle geocaching. And, you know, it's kind of interesting about bicycle geocaching. I have not done it yet, but I know, like, Daryl W. Ford loves doing it, and a lot of other people like doing bicycle geocaching. But I hear a lot of complaints about the if you're doing, like, a trail and getting on and getting off.
It really depends. Okay, in my opinion, it really depends on how close you are, how close you can get to the cache. Right. I've been on some trails where I've had to leave the bike and walk back a couple hundred feet. And when you got a $500 to $1,000 mountain bike out there, you don't. Oh, okay. My son considers it a cheap one. I consider it an expensive one.
How about this for luck? My eldest son, a couple of years back, did a sort of adventure race, multi-sport thing, and they had spot prizes. And normally your spot prize is a beanie, a water bottle, a t-shirt if you're lucky.
Right.
He didn't win the first one, which was a stand-up paddleboard. He got the second one, which was a carbon fiber mountain bike frame.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, so his 18th birthday present was buying him little things like wheels and pedals and brakes so he could actually ride it.
That's awesome,
though.
Why
it's a nice bike.
Yeah, but it's interesting about people that go geocaching and biking and like you said, Chad, with leaving a bike someplace without having some kind of quick release lock or something.
Right. I've been on some trails where they're nice, close to it, and you're able to get off, take your look. You know, you're not out of eyesight of the bike. But I've been on other trails where, you know, you got to bushwhack a couple hundred feet back and you're leaving your bike out there because you can't get your bike in there. And it's on an active trail.
Oh, yeah.
Those are uncomfortable.
Right. I got, and I bet there's other tips that that Dano has on that as well. So,
oh, yeah, I'm sure they got, I'll have to listen to that one.
Yeah, be sure to check out tomorrow on Geo Gearheads for that. But before you go there, be sure you stop off at the Geo Snippets Reboot podcast tomorrow. We had to cancel last week because quite after wife Amy had her appendectomy, she, for some silly reason, just wasn't up to snuff for going on and sitting in a chair for an hour and a half. at least not that one. She likes a recliner. Yeah, tomorrow we are going to do the same thing that we were going to do last week, which is understanding multi and puzzle geocaches. And we'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about giving away that really, really cool prize that we did do kind of like an episode 200.5 last week for a contest. So be sure to check that out and get your entries in before we do the show tomorrow. All right. Finally, please, please, please consider becoming a patron to our show. It does cost money to do a podcast. And if you can help contribute to that so that we can continue doing broadcasts, we would greatly appreciate it. Just go to geocachingpodcast.com and click either on the PayPal or the Patreon logos. And if you can throw us a couple of bucks each month to help keep us going, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you for all the people that do. And for people on the fence, get off the fence and stop on by and check it out. And if, again, if you can throw us a few bucks a month, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. All right, not too much anything going on in the mailbag or the news. So it's been quiet. I don't know quite why. But if you've got something that you want to send in to us, gcpcmailbag@gmail.com, and send us your comments, your questions, your thoughts about shows that we talked about, thoughts about subjects you want us to talk about, go ahead and send that to gcpcmailbag@gmail.com, and we greatly appreciate it. We'll have it on the show. All right, moving on. We've got this week's episode, episode 496. Four more episodes till we get to the big 500. But this week I thought it would be interesting. We haven't talked about it in a while, is understanding and just playing geocaching muggles over the years. There's a bunch of different ways that we could talk about this, so we're just going to kind of randomly go around different things. But the main thing is, how has dealing with muggles over the years of geocaching changed? For starts, because I can remember back when I started in 2008. Geocaching back then was really thought of as a very, very secretive, inclusive game. You know, we don't tell people about, you know, geocaching. We secretly, covertly go from place to place, finding our geocaches and moving on from that. And so back then, the tactics were much different, or at least thought of much different than they do nowadays. You know, you really had to be sneaky when it came to that.
I think today, now, you know, I've always been kind of forthright with them, telling them I'm geocaching, etc. And early days, I would get kind of crazy looks, like, "What the world are you talking about geocaching?"
Right.
Nowadays, I get it's like, "Yeah, I heard something about that."
Yes.
You get a lot more of that today.
Yeah, it's a lot more in the press now. Go ahead, Sarah.
It's sort of mixed. I mean, I say what I'm doing and I get the crap. Oh, that thing, or what? and if I get the huh sort of look, I hate the tagline of looking for Tupperware in the woods. that's got very old very quickly. But I'd say what I do now is say it's like Pokemon Go, but with real things to find.
Ah, okay. Good way of putting it.
And quite often just show them the page I'm looking at. And,
right.
You know, and they get their eyes glaze over and they think you're mad and they wander off.
Yeah, you get that either way, or you get that pleasant, they're trying to be polite. Oh, that sounds like fun, as they slowly back away. So, yeah, it is interesting on how things have changed over. So why don't we just kind of talk a little about what it is with a muggle. What is one? Well, a muggle in geocaching terms is a person. It's kind of like Harry Potter. Think of Harry Potter with muggles. They were non-magical people that had no clue that the magical world existed. And so they were, you know, they just were, that's what they were fondly known as, muggles. Geocaching muggles, same principle, only the people just aren't aware of what geocaching is, or what geocachers do, or why are you skulking in that corner over there? That kind of thing. Those those tend to be what muggles are. In their eyes, we look odd. We carry, now nowadays, again, this is something that was different back then. Back then, cell phones were not as big as they are now, where every child is a Borg implant. back then, we had GPSR units, so they were bigger, they were clunkier than the standard cell phone, and yet sometimes we tried to use them as cell phones just to look like we were fitting in, that kind of thing. But to the muggles, we look odd or crazy or suspicious. It's like, why are you doing that? So that's basically what a muggle is for geocaching as well. One of the things that, and we can put this in as part of the discussion, a general thinking from muggles, and this came from the forum. The question was, I'm pretty new to geocaching, so I'm hoping the community can help explain something to me. Why the general feeling that geocaching must be hidden from muggles? Is it just because of how often non-players may steal, damage, or move a cache? Or is it an exclusive thing?
I wouldn't say that we're necessarily trying to protect the geocaches, because they're usually pretty well hidden unless people actually go out and start geocaching. Because I think as a community, we want other people to start geocaching.
Right.
It was such an unknown thing. I was a muggle at one point, of course. You know, it was such an unknown thing that until you're kind of brought into it, you don't even realize that it's happening. And then it's a somewhat difficult thing to appropriately explain.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of like, well, it's kind of like treasure hunting, or it's kind of like Pokemon Go, as Sarah says.
Yeah.
You know, to really explain it, and, you know, I've tried to tell engineers about it, and they're like,
what?
What? You know, and until they actually do it and try,
don't
a little...
go turn to dust in the sunlight.
And don't do what now?
Turn to dust in the sunlight.
Right.
I thought you weren't meant to take techies outside.
Oh, yeah, they implode. You got to be careful.
Yeah, it's not just pretty. Slather ourselves with lots of sunscreen. So,
yes, you know, I think one of the coolest, to see the light bulb go off when you try to explain to a muggle what geocaching is and how many geocaches that there can be, and you never knew they were there. That realization, right, that they come over of, you have got to be kidding me, because if you're in an area like I am here, where the Raleigh area has, I don't know, 4,000 geocaches, 5,000 geocaches within a 10-mile area. And to sit there and say, yeah, there's one right over here. There's one right over in the yard over here at the station. There's one right over here. And to have them realize you've been walking your whole time here never knowing these were there. That, right, I love seeing the light bulb go off.
Yeah, pulling up a map of the caches usually helps a lot. And then they get the questions like, what are all these smileys here? It's like, well, those are the ones that I found.
Yes, exactly. And again, it's so much different now than it was back then. I mean, I've always kind of been the type that I feel more comfortable if I geocache with confidence. So in other words, you just go in like you own the place, and you find it, and you sign the log, and you put it back, and away you go. Is so much better than other ways. And we'll go into a little bit of that in a bit here. But I think one of the main things that that for people to understand with muggles, because this is humans coming in and finding a package or a container and how they react to it. You have to remember in cases like that, theft is huge. people are like, oh, cool, it's full of these little trinkets. I'll just take it with me. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important, and that's why we tried originally to not tell people so much about what geocaching was back then, so that to, in a way for protection for the containers. But most of that relies to geocachers and just how well they hide them in the first place.
All right.
Yep. Interesting stuff. Or vandalism. I mean, we've had, what do we call it? We call them, they've been muggled.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the things, too. Sometimes people, you know, walk up to a container, find it, and do bad things. So.
Yeah, and this is kind of slightly outside of the muggle area, but what I like to call the active anti-cacher, who
yes.
goes out intentionally to destroy geocaches or does something to promote what they believe are negative aspects about it on social media
yeah.
when they really don't have a clue.
Yeah, and a lot of that... Go ahead, sir.
I was going to say a twist on that. There's the occasional bad apple cacher that has, say, a personal vendetta against another one or another group and
yeah.
targets theirs, but that's sort of not muggles, but that's random acts.
It all, yes, and it stinks, yeah. quite frankly. Yeah. And it's terrible yeah. that people do that. But yeah, about every 3 years or so, I've seen the cycle where you'll get a couple of anti-geocachers and basically just calling it, you know, litter and going that way and how bad it mm-hmm. is for the environment and all the rest of it. It's like, really? But about every 3 years or so, that pops its little face up every once in a while and then goes back down. All right, so speaking of which, why don't we go ahead and just kind of talk in. Way back when I did a thing called How to Deal with Geocaching Muggles, which was a GeoSnippets video that I put on YouTube back in like 2010 or so. And what it did is it kind of broke down the different type of muggles that are out there and just kind of put them in a category that I think any geocacher that has come across a muggle has had these situations pop up. And it's just a way for people to understand what the different types of muggles are and how reactive they could be. So we'll just kind of hit off the first one, the oblivious muggle. This is a type of muggle that just goes along on their daily life, completely oblivious to geocaching as a whole. They are most likely to just stumble upon you while you're geocaching, usually too wrapped up with whatever they're doing to even notice you. It is amazing how much you can sit there and do things and not people have a frickin' clue that you're even there. They're completely oblivious,
oh, yeah.
have no clue.
Yeah, I you know, I've walked up and grabbed magnetic key holders right from behind people, walked
oh,
away,
yeah.
signed the log,
yeah.
come back and slid it right back there.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, you know, don't even pay attention.
Don't even realize that you're there. And it's amazing. Yeah.
Those are the best kind in my opinion.
I agree.
It's
I
easier
agree.
To do in crowds.
Yes.
So there's one cache about 10 miles from me that I'd been after for a while, but every time I went there was somebody wandering around, or it was just too many people to do it. And then one day I was there and there was a big festival on in the sort of field next park area next, just by it. And hey, I got it, I signed it and I replaced it in amongst about a couple of thousand people. And there must have been 100 people within 10 feet of me, all of which were looking at the big shiny fire truck that was parked just beside it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just enough of a distraction for people not to even yeah. notice you're there.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
So it's stealth in numbers.
Exactly. Exactly. The next category that we like to call the semi-curious muggle. Now, these muggles are fairly aware of their surroundings and may notice a geocacher if they're not known to them. We all have that neighbor that absolutely, you know, knows whose car and wherever, whose dog, whatever is in the neighborhood. They may catch your body language, or just out of curiosity may come up to you and ask what you're doing. That happens all the time. Hey, what oh, yeah. you doing? You get that. Usually if you are looking for a geocache and you can't find it.
Right.
And you've been
you're
in
looking, every which way. It's like it's like, are you, you lose your keys or something?
Yeah. And that's it. A lot of times it's just curious of, hey, is there something wrong? Can I help you?
And you're not expecting it. Yes. And you jump about 10 feet in the air. That makes you look even more guilty.
Yes, exactly. And it's usually some kind of, when you go geocaching, the easiest way to look suspicious is to try to not to look suspicious. If you're sitting there and you're just kind of looking over your shoulder, you know, think of the type of things that a shoplifter, when they're in a store, and the type of things that they do, and they're kind of secluded, they're kind of hunched down. Yeah, and they're just kind of looking in all different directions to see if anybody's looking back at you. That makes you look suspicious.
I used to do that a lot the first year or so of caching, and then afterwards it's like, yeah, screw it. If someone comes up to me, talks to me, they come up to talk to me.
Yes.
It's like, if I'm, my suspiciousness is because I got my head stuck in a bush.
What could you possibly lose in a bush? I'm just saying, you know? Anywho, the other one that we've got out there is this one will drive anybody nuts, is the lingerer muggle. These are the ones are most frustrating to the most frustrating muggles to geocachers. Lingerers usually stand or sit right next to or sometimes on a geocache, minding their own business, enjoying their day. They're right at ground zero. When this happens to you, just wait until they leave before approaching ground zero. Now, there's a couple of different things that happen with this. I think Murphy's Law of Muggles is very, very, very true. If there's a muggle anywhere within 500 feet of a geocache, they will be standing at ground zero.
Yeah. This reminds me of one of my favorite finds. There was this young lady, college age lady, in a mini skirt, sitting at a table. That the geocache, you know, and these, you know, four burly guys come walking up to her and stuff. She looks up, like, "Excuse me, do you know what geocaching is?" She goes, "No." And so we explained to her what geocaching was, and it's like, "And we think there's one here at this table. Can we look? We don't want to be perverts, but you know.
Yeah, we got to look underneath here.
Well, hey, you're a skirt lifter anyway, so.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, I love
that. Yeah, you know, she was polite. Got up. We found it in a couple seconds and showed her. Here's
this
the
what we're looking at.
Here's the log.
We're really not as weird as you may think we are.
Exactly.
I've got a related sort of story. My cousin, who lives most of the year in Scotland, but he's got the family have a hot small holiday home in the Canary Islands, which is off the coast of Africa. And it's a place where a lot of Brits and a lot of Germans go for the holidays. Mm-hmm. And David sort of does the admin for this, for several people, for the flats and booking, because he speaks French and German. And don't know how he does it, but he does. And he has, because he's been doing it a few years, he has a number of people who've kept coming back for bookings. And one of them said, "I'm a geocacher. I come back. Can I place a geocacher in the boundary? I'll maintain it. I'll do that." And explained what it was. And David said, "Yeah, okay." And then when he heard I did it, "Oh, you're one of those." Right. And he told me this story. When they're there, they like to sit and watch. They can always spot the geocachers. Mm-hmm. Because you're in your usual gear, you're looking very serious, you've got your mobile phone, whatever. And so you walk along the beach to pick up this cache. Only problem is, this bit of Tenerife is a nudist beach.
Oh, there's no place to hide that GPS, is there?
Where did you put your pen? So can you... So,
okay, that gets...
Dressing to blend in there.
That is awesome.
Sorry.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. And you know, that's bound to happen. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. Just too many flashes of too many things. Anyhow. So yeah, you just don't know. But one of the techniques Dave DeBearmaker said back, and it actually works. If you really are in a hurry and somebody is sitting at ground zero, you can always use the creep factor. Basically, mm-hmm. what you do is you go, and if they're sitting on a bench, just sit on a bench a little closer than you normally would give a person in their personal space, and just sit there.
And it, I've used this technique.
It's great. And after
it wouldn't work as well for me.
After about a minute or so, they're kind of like, they either move over, and if you really want to do the gag is move over a little bit the same way. but eventually, after about a minute or two, they're just going to give up and leave because it's you're too close. It's just, you know, you're in the space. So
or pull out the pepper spray.
But if you're just sitting there.
If they pull out the pepper spray, that's the time to say,
enough.
Hang on. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm a geocacher. Yeah. I was just trying to make you uncomfortable so I could search this bench for cash.
And not make you feel uncomfortable and pull out your pepper spray. So, yes. But, yes, it does actually work. I've had it several times where I think I was either with my daughter or my wife, a couple of them, and I said, watch this. And just sit over and just sit. Now, I'm in a nice, colorful tie-dye shirt to start with, and they're like, oh, that's it, they're gone. It's great. It just it's comical, but it does work. So yeah, keep that in mind for the lingerers, because those will drive geocachers absolutely insane. The last one that we had is the whistleblower. Now this is the one that you are going to have the biggest problem. This is the one that is about as territorial as you can get. This is a muggle geocachers absolutely dread. It's usually the nosy neighbor that has to know every person walking up and down their street. They start to panic if an unfamiliar car or person is in their field of view. And they're also the first people to call the police just because they can. Note, some whistleblowers call the police just to be recognized as being the good citizen and wouldn't even think twice about getting the authorities involved just to be in the spotlight. Yay, I saved the neighborhood because I called the cops. Everybody's got a neighbor. Everybody's got a neighbor.
I had to move a cache because of a nosy neighbor.
Yep.
was calling the cops when they would see people out there looking up in the tree, and they would call the cops, and sure enough, cop would come out there, and if they weren't gone quick enough, you know, they would wind up getting a little Leo action.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, there after the third time it was noted in the logs there, it's like, it's time for me to move that cache.
And it is. I mean, you're going to get that. And people in this day and age, especially post 9/11, you know, everybody that is not the norm is suspicious. And that's just the life that in the era of which, at least in the U.S., where a lot of the people are, you know, tell the people if you see something that's wrong, and they got it down. I mean, that's all there is to it. But you're going to get a Leo with these folks.
Yeah. Christchurch Mega a couple of years back had something similar. They'd done one of the people had done an absolutely awesome bit of geo art puzzle trail. All about almost 70 horse-based puzzles, and they were laid out in the shape of a horse's head. We went round and tried to get them all, and we couldn't get number 30. By the time we got to it, there was a big sign stuck on the sort of electricity box that it had been a magnetic key holder attached to, saying, disabled, neighbours complained. Yeah. And apparently, this is quite a swanky little suburb, and one of the neighbours opposite that was still being built on, but one of the neighbours opposite the street came out and was ranting and raving at everybody, and she really had a go at one person saying, how could you bring kids to do this? Drugs and evil.
Yeah.
And the person she chose to have a go at was actually the most, and as far as I know, still is the most prolific cacher in New Zealand with over 30,000 finds to his name.
Right.
And and I'm sort of thinking, if she'd been in the southern US, he said, you know, she'd have been out there with a shotgun.
That is only mostly true. Rock salt is not necessarily a bullet.
Okay.
Just giving into my prejudices and stereotypes there. Sorry.
While I have not had a Leo incident, I have had a open carry incident.
Oh, really?
in Texas at one cache that was along a farmer's fence line, although it was not on his property.
Right.
It was in the easement. But he came up there, asked me what I'm doing. I was like, I'm geocaching. I explained what I was like. It's like, well, this is private property and you can't be doing that here. And he makes sure that I noticed he's carrying. It's like, okay, fine.
Whatever.
I'm gone. I'm leaving.
Have a nice day.
DNF'd it and sent the cache owner a message. And was like, sometimes it happens.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You get the one set that's their territory, and they're going to make sure that they watch it, and they may have other reasons. I mean, I've had times with that, and I guess we can kind of jump into that as well, is working with the authorities when it comes to this, Leo's type stuff. There's some techniques you want to keep in mind because they are the ones with the rules. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, mm-hmm. I did not know when I was at a state park, there was a brand new geocache that was placed. It wasn't on that I thought of on the side of the road that the state park was. I pulled off to the side, was signing the log, putting the geocache back, and two state troopers carrying Glocks came up and said, "What you doing?" And I explained what it is, and they said, "No, this really is still state land on this side. This can't be here." And it's like, "Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir." And I never knew that part of it was not even part of state land. But the reason why we have to be so careful is because they have so many problems with drug runners going through. So anybody walking in areas that are not designated for walking in a park, you're under suspicion. So you want to keep in mind whenever you're approached by a police officer, a security guard, the property owner, what have you, don't give them bullshit. Excuse my French. I'm just saying as honestly as I can, don't lie. Tell them what you're doing. If you can have in your pouch or right there with you, near you, a geocaching pamphlet or two. That way, when they come up and say, "What you doing?" "Well, I'm geocaching," you've got this little piece of paper that has all the rules, all the regulations, who to contact, all the information about the game, so that they don't think you're just pulling this out of your air and giving them a line. This is something that's tangent that you can actually show to them. They're paid, especially when it comes to the police, to tell if you're lying or not. And if you come up with some cockamamie story, you're digging your own hole is what you're doing. Don't do that. And I'm sure if Scott Burks was here, he will tell you, especially from the fine folks that have escorted him out of the state. Don't give any BS because they don't like that.
Right.
So, yeah, whistleblowers and people of authority, they are just they are the people that you want to do that. You just got to just be careful. Just be careful.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. No, sir.
Yes.
And be straight up.
Well, I actually
here's my phone. You can see what here's the information I have.
Yes. And back then, in some days, you didn't have the phone. You had your GPS unit that you were checking with things that are pieces of paper that showed that have on it. Yeah. And for the incident in that particular case where the state park rangers came up, they insisted, "Show me where this is." Because the first thing that they're thinking is, "I'm hiding drugs or trying to pick up drugs. Where's this little stash at?"
Yeah. And I've heard stories about people not being able to find it. They're going out there. It's like, "Well, I haven't found it yet."
Yes.
So, now, I haven't been in that situation myself.
But I have, and it's funny part is I've actually had them help me find it. So that's all part of it as well. So you get good situations, you get tense situations, and many of the tense situations, it's just good to go find another geocache somewhere else. And just go that way. So, and make note of it in a log. Don't hold it to yourself. when it comes to stuff like this, especially when they say this isn't supposed to be here. Kind of make that known to the cache owner.
Right, definitely.
Because chances are they probably didn't put it there with permission anyways. So just saying. Why do we look suspicious to muggles when we go over? In the older days, we used to kind of look down at the GPSR unit, and we're kind of just kind of skulking and looking down, and our shoulders are down, and we're kind of hunched over. The body language in any, you know, civilization is key to know what you're up to, if depending on how you're holding yourself up when you're doing things. So if we're hunched over looking over our shoulder to see if anybody else is looking to see us, you're looking suspicious right there. Mm-hmm. So be careful. Now, nowadays, most everybody's using your cell phone. No big deal. Everybody's got one.
No longer looks weird for you to be constantly staring at your phone.
Yes, and then looking down and then staring back and then looking down. That's 90% of the kids these days. So it's not as much the strange devices, but back in the day, it really was. Matter of fact, a lot of times we would sit there and say things, and I had this in my video for how to deal with muggles. I still have in the trunk of my car one of those reflective workman vests that I had back then, and I had a clipboard. And I even had a hard hat, go figure. And so it was one of those things where if I went in and it's in a muggle prone area and there's a lot of people standing around, I used to put that on. I would keep my GPSR unit on my on the clipboard, holding it down with it, and I looked like I fit right in. Now, of course, the tie-dye shirt might have given away a bit, but as a reference, people wouldn't even look twice.
A couple bucks at Harbor Freight for one of those vests.
And, oh yeah,
you know,
one of the best investments that you can get for geocaching.
Yep.
Well, for us, sort of high vis vests are known as Canterbury camo, because after the earthquake and the rebuild, there's so many people wandering around with them because they're doing whatever.
Yeah.
And another good one.
Yep.
Is if you're on a bike, you have the perfect excuse to stop and fiddle with something and try and sort it out. And, oh, no, that's not quite right. I'm just trying to make this work. There's something that's bothering me, and you can tweak it for as long as you need to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's just tons and tons of stuff. Well, like Chad said earlier in the show, it was not uncommon at all. If you're in an area and you see somebody that's going to walk past you, and you had your GPS unit in your hand, you just put it to your ear like it was a cell phone,
right?
And start talking. No, I think I'm fine. Do you need a grocery bag of this? Do you want some eggs with that? I mean, yeah. And people, they just walk by, but you had to do little techniques. Now, nowadays, if you're in a high muggle area, still trying to tie your shoe. Looking for your keys is still a popular one.
I've tied my shoes when I'm wearing mocks. So yeah. It's like there's no shoelaces on there, but
they don't look enough to look. That's exactly. The kicker. If you're going on, I can't tell you how many times I've literally just sat on the cache. And just sat there. People are walking by. I'm on a curb because you've got those nice drain types and stuff. And I'm just sitting there, da 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 da, sticking my hand underneath and looking for stuff. Hopefully there aren't any spiders or whatnot. But I'm just saying. But yeah, you just go through and you just gotta do that little bit of misdirection. Mm-mm-mm. All right, so let's see. I think that's pretty much the main ones with that. Again, with the Leos, people of authority, don't lie. Please save yourself. And I've actually been in situations where I was in one where we stopped off at a geocache. We were like six of us in a van, And it was at a kind of a, not quite a landmark thing, but a historic area. And a cop car came by just wondering if we were okay. And, hey, how's it going? And he started asking individually, what's up? How's going there? And the driver, who was the first person that he asked to, he said, so what we're doing? And he came up with some bullshit story, excuse me. And I'm sitting there going, oh, we're all going to die. This is it. We're going to jail. I hate lying anyways for something. And when it's something that you can so easily just sit there and say, yeah, this is what we're doing. I'm just saying it's easier to tell the truth and a lot less comfortable.
And that's one of the things that I, when I've taken newbies out to cash stuff, it's like, if you're ever in a situation, just tell the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the first things that, I think they should learn, because, if you get in one of those situations, you can get one of those situations very quickly, or like me, almost never get in that situation by chance of luck.
Yep.
Or be like Scott, where you get it in a weekly.
They got a Scott buzzer that just goes off when he's within a certain mile radius. It goes that way. So, yeah, you just got to be careful. Now, there have been times that, if I'm attending an event and the event is by a small town, usually I go in town for supplies and things that I want to get for something. If I see a police officer, somewhere, he's either in his car waiting or whatever, I will walk over and tell him, hey, by the way, if you see all these strange people walking around looking for stuff, this is what's going on. And they are very appreciative of that, so that it alleviates all the tension. If they know what's going on, it's like, yeah, I'll tell everybody so that they know. And so
I've had people come up to me during mega events and stuff, or especially the Texas Challenge, because we're all running around the town trying to find stuff and ask, what's going on, and explain a bit about them. It's like, and I'm in the middle of the contest, so I got to run.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like, but I said,
it's just appreciative of it.
Yes, very much so. So there you go, Muggles. I mean, if you want, we'll have in the show notes, there's actually an entire wiki donated to deal with Muggles, with Muggles in general. So if you want to check up all the Harry Potter references and whatnot, that's all there for your convenience, and it'll be in the show notes. All right. Well, good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks to Chad and to Sarah for stopping on by, as they always do. Thank you so much. And thank you, fine folks, for stopping on by and also subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast and coming by and listening or watching us each and every week. We greatly, greatly do appreciate it. All right. I think I can actually go through and wrap this puppy up. Let's do that. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast, right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We'll love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Heart Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Chad Courtney, and Sarah T.S. The show is copyright 2017 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.